Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. This is Renee. The name of the show is Heart to Heart, and I'm so happy that you joined us tonight. I have a very special guest tonight. It's a young woman who is a teacher at a Florida elementary school. She teaches first grade. And we've talked a little bit about this, she and I. She actually has helped a little bit with one of my grandchildren and the six-year-old who is struggling a little bit with some of the academics in kindergarten. And we've had long discussions about whether or not kindergarten should be for learning how to leave mommy and daddy and be social and learn the social graces and learn how to share and be friends and be polite and all the things that we talk about, to be honest with you, on this show. Because what a 5, 6, and 7-year-old learns during that time in their life has a lot to do with the adult that they become. So Amanda and I have put together a small questionnaire that I'm going to ask her some questions and hear her answers. Now, if you'd like to call in and ask any questions of Amanda, that would be fine. But let's try to get through most of what I'm asking her before you you decide to join in, because it's possible that she'll answer your questions with what we're going to talk about. Now, I'd also like to take a moment before we start the show and say goodbye to a very dear friend on behalf of myself and several of my friends. We lost somebody very close to all of us. Her name is Irene Herrera. Irene has been ill for a little while. She was a cancer survivor. She worked for many years at Hippocrates Health Institute. She's blessed with children and grandchildren that she's very close to. And she's a very special person to a lot of us. She absolutely, positively participated in the healing of thousands of people that came through the doors at Hippocrates Health Institute in West Palm Beach. So she passed very beautifully in her own bed, and I hope that where she is now is everything she hoped it would be. And we will miss her, but we are grateful for the fact that she's not in pain or suffering any longer. So goodbye, Irene. We love you and we'll miss you. Now, I had seen that my young lady had called in and I've lost her. So she might be en route home and tried to call in and lost the signal. So we'll wait a few minutes. But part of the conversation tonight is going to be about how soon we can recognize the traits of a child, and whose responsibility is it if we see that our child is a bully, or if we see that our child is not kind to others. I'm going to put her on the spot. She's very young. I don't expect her to have all the answers, but because she's in that arena, I think that she will give us some fresh eyes, fresher than these old ones, and maybe help us understand a little bit more about what we can do and say and how we need to act, perhaps, when we're dealing with kids that we see obviously need a little guidance from us. I'm going to open up the lines for Amanda and for Shelley, who has joined us as well tonight. Hi, Amanda.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. I've just kind of set everybody up so that they know a little bit about what we're going to talk about, and I've just brought in Shelly. Hi, Shell.
Hi, Shelly. Hi, Amanda. Hi, Reenie. Wow.
Hi,
I had
sweetie.
A long day.
You're just so easily led, you see. You just repeated what I did. You know, that's
I
all right.
So.
Yes, if only the children were that easy, right, Amanda?
I know.
So I've already let people know that you and I have talked before. I have not told everybody that I am very blessed to have you as my granddaughter. I didn't share that with everybody, but so you all know, Amanda is my granddaughter. So I'm very proud of what she's done and who she's becoming as a young lady. And I've asked her help, as I mentioned, a couple different occasions with some of the other younger people in the family, and I think for as young as she is and as new as she is on the block of teaching, she has some valuable insights. And as I mentioned before, sometimes young, fresh, new outlook can put a different twist on things that we tend to kind of twist to death so that they're unrecognizable. So maybe this will help all of us. Now, Mandy, I'm going to start with some of the questions that I had given to you. Do you see bully problems this young in your first graders?
You know, absolutely. I mean, what we see as bullying isn't necessarily the same as what a young child might see as bullying. And they might not consider it bullying, but kids still say things that hurt their feelings and do things that might hurt their feelings or even, you know, give a look that might hurt their feelings, and it's all bullying, whether we look at it the same way or not.
Mm-hmm. What about physical bullying? I know young people don't understand that the other child's space is their own space, and of course, you know, that's true with adults as well, but we do try to teach kids to not hit and not to get in other people's face. Do you have that problem in first grade?
You know, I'm lucky to be at a really good school where the kids are pretty well behaved, but I actually started something called a tattle box, and instead of the kids having to come to me and tell me what, you know, to tell on their friends, then I have them go to the tattle box and write it down. And a couple times I've gone through it and I saw, you know, so-and-so hit me, so-and-so kicked me. So I do, I haven't seen it, but mm-hmm. I do know that it's happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think once they're 6 and 7 years old, they're much smarter than a three-year-old who's going to poke their baby sister in the eye just because they feel like it in front of mommy because they haven't realized, you know, that there's going to be some results from that hurting their baby sister and a price to pay. So
right.
I do think once they're 6 and 7, they're smart enough to not kick or be mean to somebody in front of the teacher.
But,
so,
you know, I think it also has to do with just discipline at home. If a child doesn't learn that at home, then they will go home and do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important that it's stressed at home that you don't do that. Because I was also at another school that the kids weren't very well behaved, and so they were fighting all the time.
Right, right. So from your point of view, then what I just got from what you just said is it has a lot to do, obviously, with the parenting prior to them arriving at school in kindergarten or whatever grade they're in. It has a lot to do with what kind of participation is brought in by the parents, et cetera.
Absolutely. You know, if you discipline a student at school, you expect the parent to follow through with it. So if the child knows that they're going to be able to go home and get away with it, then they're not going to care what kind of discipline is going on at school.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's true. They feel they choose their safe zones. So if you do witness, well, first of all, let's see how you handle the notes when you from the tattle box. If you read something now, are they told to say who did it and their name and give all the information?
I tell them that they don't have to write their name on it, But if I see something that says this student hit me, I'll pull that student aside and say, I saw that you hit somebody, and I'll talk to them about it. I'll tell them why it's bad, and I go by a point system in my classroom as well. So I'll take 5 points away, and that's a big deal. They can earn 5 points in a day. So, I mean, there's a lot of reprimands for it. So, you know, they don't want to do stuff. They don't want to hit because they know that there's consequences.
So I agree with you on that particular note, that simple statement that you just said. I think everybody, and I mean everybody, regardless of how old they know that their actions will have consequences always. So good and bad, you know. If you do something really wonderful, you often get paid back with something very wonderful. If you do something really terrible, there's bad consequences for that. So that's really how you handle it. What if you have an altercation between two kids and you walk in the classroom and you see what's going on? Say you see, let's do it this way, because this is a question I'm going to talk to you about, and I didn't put it on your list, but I thought about it after I looked over the list again tonight. If you see two kids, you walk in and you see one little boy hit another little boy, and then the other boy hits him back, and by the time you get all the way over to them without screaming your lungs out, you reach for them and pull them apart. Who gets in the most trouble, Amanda?
I've honestly never had to deal with something like that. But
okay.
I know that both of them would get in trouble. I honestly can't tell you who would get in more trouble.
Okay. Then let's talk about that a little bit. Because this is something that really bothers me. I know that's the way it's set up in schools now, that if kids fight, no ifs, ands, or buts about it, if anybody raises their hand to another student, no matter what the situation, they both get suspended. So here you have a kid who's not doing anything, in this moment at any rate. Now, whether or not this was something was perpetrated earlier or what, I don't know. But say you witness one kid hit another kid, really hit him, you know, and the other kid turns around and fights back to protect themselves. We're almost saying to them, you have to get beat up, otherwise you're going to be in as much trouble as they are.
I understand that. I have a parent that tells her kid, if somebody's picking on you, you have the right to fight them.
Yeah.
And that's just not good parenting. We have to teach our kids that fighting is not the answer. I don't have any kids myself, but if I did, I would tell them fighting is not the right answer. I understand that somebody's hitting you, but that's just the society that we live in. Everybody thinks that since one kid is getting hit, they have the right to hit back. But if kids are learning that you don't have the right to hit, then they're not going to hit in the first place.
Well, that's in the perfect world, though. And you're right. That's what we'd all like to see happen. But that still leaves us with a scenario of somebody perhaps turning the other cheek and really getting hurt. You see where I'm going with this?
Right. I mean,
so,
I understand. Like, I don't think I know any person that will just walk away and, you know, curl up into a ball and just let somebody hit them.
Well, I don't either. Of course, I'm in a family of Irishmen, so, you know, it's the way it is, you know. But I'd still like for all of us to figure out something that's more fair. Now, mind you, if it's a scenario where it's your word against mine, then you have no choice. Then hands down, both kids get in trouble. You participated in an altercation. I don't know who threw the first punch. I don't know who's to blame. I don't know who started it. That's one scenario. But when you see what happened, when you see another kid, because now a lot of schools have got cameras and what have you, so you witness that somebody, a child was accosted by another child, and the other one turned around and lo and behold whipped somebody else's butt because they hit them, I'm having trouble swallowing. I don't want that to happen, don't get me wrong. I don't want them to fight at all. But mm-hmm. I'm still having trouble saying to my 7-year-old little girl who's pretty tiny, that if some big girl comes over and swats her upside the head, she's just supposed to take it. That's what I'm having a problem with. So
well, I'd
like...
Sorry.
You think there's a what?
I think there's a difference between fighting back and trying to stop it.
Okay. That's...
I understand that if it's a small girl, obviously she's not going to be able to stop a big girl.
Mm-hmm.
But you can certainly try. She's not going to be able to beat up the big girl either, but she's trying.
So how about with little people? You can't do this with teenagers, I don't think, although it may work as well. You know how when they teach you for your own safety's sake, if somebody, if an adult comes towards you that you don't know. Now, an adult is not going to just walk up to you and start slapping you around, but they may have intentions to hurt you, but they're going to snatch you, right? They're going to pick you up and run with you. All the sources now that teach this to kids and everything and talk about them is scream and kick and yell as loud as you can. That's what they tell them to do because they obviously can't fight a grown-up. It's not going to make any difference, but screaming gets a lot of attention. So maybe that's an alternative. What do you think would happen at least then they have some recourse, Amanda. They don't feel like they're the target.
Right. I mean, at school, teachers should be watching. I know it's impossible to watch every single kid at every time, but to have a fight break out in your classroom, that would be pretty severe for you not to see that. So, I mean, and usually you want to get all of the other kids away from it first because you don't want them to get hurt. So, I mean, you step in after that.
Well, I must tell you that that's the way my head works as well, that I would be paying attention and I would know by the change of the atmosphere in the room probably that something like that was going to happen. However, we know from what we read in the papers, what we see on the news, that's often not happening. Very often. People send me videos all the time. The most recent video, I forwarded it to Shelley. Shelley, feel free to stick your voice in whenever you need to. But remember the video that I sent you of the girl that got beat up on the bus?
Mm-hmm.
No other kids stepped in to help her. And this girl was stomping on her, Amanda, pushed her down in the middle of the aisles and was actually holding herself up by the seat, the backs of the seats, and just like pummeling her with her feet. And the bus driver kept on driving. If you'll forgive the pun, the wheels on the bus went round and round and nobody did a damn thing.
Right.
So, you know, in the perfect world, I'm with you. And I know that's the kind of teacher you're going to be. But my point is, I'm thinking about the kid that's in a room where they don't have a good teacher, perhaps, or an observant teacher, or whatever the case might be. I don't want to say anybody's a bad teacher, but somebody that's not paying attention. Say it's an older teacher, and she doesn't even really hear good. Who knows what the scenario would be? But you've got a kid that's being accosted, and she knows if she raises her hand, she's going to be in just as much trouble. So, you know, something about that just doesn't sound fair to me, nor does it sound like something that we should be telling them to do because it's not right. So So let's make this an assignment for the three of us and anybody else who's out there listening who has a child and has a point of view about this, because I don't think it's fair for the kid who fights back to get the same punishment as the kid who started the fight. I'm sorry, I don't. So there must be another way. There must be another suggestion, idea, I don't care. But let's hear them. If somebody's got them out there, let's hear them and see what we can do that seems fairer. And in doing that, because you also have got the angrier teenagers, not your little guys, but angrier teenagers that are going to say, well, it's worth it. If I get so-and-so suspended right along with me, it's worth punching her and getting a punch back, or punching him and getting a punch back, because he'll be in trouble.
Well, you know, Right. Something that would be a fantastic solution, which I don't know that schools are taking so many things out of programs, it's probably not realistic, but I'll put it out there anyway, is that whenever you see these survival movies, whether it's a child that was bullied or a woman that was mugged or anything like that, the victim always gets into some sort of martial arts training so that they can build up a self-confidence so that they aren't in victim mode anymore. We talked about this the other day, that you have people that are bullies and you have people that are victims. You have people that almost have that air about them, and they sort of walk and hold themselves in a way that sort of attracts people that have that bullying mentality to begin with. So it's almost like they both have things with them that draw them to each other. So if you can teach the child who's the one being victimized, the one being abused, to have a little bit more self-confidence, they wouldn't need to engage in any return violence, because they would have confidence to carry themselves in such a way that they wouldn't be inviting that in anymore. A lot of it comes with the fact that the victims, unfortunately, become very fearful, and they sort of set themselves up for repeated incidences of violence and being not treated well.
Well, that's the old adage about a woman who continually gets involved with, a significant other who abuses her, and that becomes a pattern for her. But now we're talking about, with Amanda's class, we're talking about really young kids. We're talking about really young kids who haven't formed those phobias or that body English and all that kind of stuff that we're talking about. I see that 10, I would say, and on up. But when you're talking about 5, 6, and 7-year-olds, they're pretty much thinking that they're, except for the really, really timid, shy ones, they're pretty much thinking that they can do anything. A lot of them believe, a lot of little boys believe that they're actually superheroes. So, I do like the fact that there should be extra school activities that teach young people who feel that they're being picked on and bullied and things to be, to get some kind of, martial arts doesn't mean a lot to me, but anything that helps you defend yourself. Now,
well, it doesn't have to be martial arts. They have all kinds of self-defense classes that aren't necessarily martial arts. But what they do, teach kids to walk away instead of engage. If you have the ability to walk away, and a lot of times they don't have the ability to walk away, but when you do, you should always walk away. It's actually braver to walk away than to stand there and engage in something that a lot of other people can get hurt in.
Okay, so say Amanda goes there, what you just said. And, of course, I don't know that you can get that a point across to somebody so young, but that is one suggestion, to tell somebody, if somebody's pushed you or something. It all depends on how big the assault is, though.
Right.
And
there's more than one person involved in it.
Yes, yes. Well, like what happened to Crystal in school.
Right.
And they have it right on tape. Do you know about that, Amanda, what happened to Crystal?
No,
Brewer?
I didn't hear about that.
She was in the hallway, and she and this girl have been butting heads for several years, but they've known each other for a long time. And she walked up behind Crystal and said something smart and pulled her hair. And Crystal turned around and said something smart back and kept walking. And they showed right on the tape in the school that she asked a friend to hold her books and went right after Crystal and yanked her over backwards by her hair. Crystal flipped her around and got on top of her. And then the other girl that was holding the books grabbed Crystal again, by her head and by her hair and yanked her off the other girl. Crystal and the girl who lit the first blow were both suspended. Even though it was all on video and everybody could see what took place. So,
I mean, that's, again, I mean, she had the option to walk away. And I understand that when somebody does something to you like that, you're upset. You're the last.
Well, she did walk away the first time. She did walk away the first time, and it was on tape showing her walk away the first time. Yes, she made a wise remark. Her grandmother doesn't really want to know what words she said, but she made a wise remark, and she kept walking, and that's when they accosted her again, and that's the chance you're taking when you turn around and walk away.
Right.
So I think, let's think about this, because we are going to do some more shows like this, and I hope Amanda will always have time to join us and talk about this, because this is great input when we're talking about kids as young as the ones that she's dealing with, because that's when, you know, that's when we really have to start changing things. Now, I have another question, Mandy. Do you think the problem with this kind of behavior is the same with boys as it is with girls?
Absolutely. I mean, mm-hmm. I have parents that call me and say that a girl's friend is picking on her for her shoes because she wears different shoes every day.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's not, again, it's not physical bullying, but mental bullying is just as
Yes. Well, absolutely. Sometimes even more harmful. I have someone joining us that wants to talk. I'm going to bring them in.
Oh, hello, Renee. It's Gary.
Hi, Gary. How are you? I thought that was you. I'm trying to memorize everybody's phone numbers, but I'm not really all that good at it yet. Well, I'm glad you joined us.
Yeah, interesting topic. I'm dumbfounded about it because I'm, like, confused. I'm like, wow, what does one do? Like, I used to take the punches when I was in school. I never fought back. I would just take the punches. I mean, I always protected the underdog.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did that, I got carried away. You know, it was just verbal, but I would never fault anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I would take the punishment after. I would get punched afterwards.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I never fought back. I wasn't a fighter, never wanted to be, wasn't in my blood, never had a desire to hurt another human like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and I mean, the people that usually punched me were the ones to get suspended, and I always felt good because I was never suspended. I always felt like, it gave me more power that I never got suspended. And I, you know, I just did it. But, I mean, times are different now, too, and I'm thinking, you know, if you had, like my older son, if anybody laid a hand on him, he would retaliate, and I would back him up 100%. He had it in him to be, you know, I mean, he would never cause trouble. People would go after him, and if they ever did and he wanted to retaliate, I would support him 100%. I would, and if he got suspended, well, we'd just hang out and go to the movies or something. I mean, because
I understand that point of view, but imagine though what that does. I don't know. Somehow that damages our psyche a little bit. Somewhere in there is the innuendo that it's that to be a really well-behaved young person, you should let somebody slap you around and then let somebody else punish them. Because they're the ones that are going to get in trouble. You're the good girl or you're the good boy if you don't fight back. And I'm not sure that that's the kind of seed I want to plant in anybody. So,
but it would be similar to, like, as an adult. I mean, if somebody threatened up as adults, I mean, you know, I think people would be more likely to protect themselves, and I feel like that's what kids are doing too. And I can't see why. I don't know. I just don't think kids that fight back should be the ones getting punished.
Me either.
I really don't, and that's why you know. But I mean, the schools do it that way. You fight back, you lay another hand, you're going to get suspended. So I don't make it a big deal if he did get suspended for it, because I know the facts. I know he wouldn't start trouble. He was like me. He protects, you know, kids that got bullied,
mm-hmm.
and he would stand up for them, and he would usually
mm-hmm.
get in fights over that.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't
mm-hmm.
see punishing him for it, you know? I wish he did something different and, you know, like talk to him or something or try to calm the situation down, but...
Well, in the perfect world, somebody punches you and you have the presence of mind to look at them and say, excuse me, what are you doing? But who has that? I mean, you know, that's out of the question. But and I certainly appreciate your point of view. He's your kid. I mean, I'll be honest with you. People picked on Diana a lot in school. And she'd come home, and sometimes she'd fight back, and sometimes she wouldn't. By the time she was 19, nobody messed with her. And she's not anything near as big as I am or anything. But nobody messed with her, and that was why. So I just feel like in this beginning time, if we could come up with something that makes more sense, than getting into a fisticuffs, or I just really believe that if they're going to put videos in the school, the simplest thing for me is they're going to put videos in the school, somebody watches the video, and whoever threw the first punch, made the first whatever, they're the ones that get in trouble. If repeatedly the same person is getting picked on, then me, I would look into what that other child is doing, because it's possible...
Right.
That this is a sneaky little child and they're doing things when they know nobody can see them and they're driving somebody else to being mean to them. There's always two sides to every issue. But
sure.
I do believe that there has to be something that makes more sense to me than to say, you know, don't raise your hands back when somebody hurts you. I mean, look at Josie Ratley. I mean, and that was a horrible scenario. And I have very strong feelings about what happened to the young man that hurt her because of that whole scenario. But the point of fact was she just pretty much laid there on the ground while he kicked her.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and no other children entered into that one either and tried to help her. So I don't know. There's something missing. Now, Amanda, let me ask you this. What happens if you have to speak to a parent because their little baby that they sent to school that they think the sun rises and sets in is a bully? Have you ever had to do that?
I haven't, but, I mean, I've spoke to parents that said that another child is bullying. And usually I handle it. I've never experienced anything so severe where I had to handle it outside of the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think if I was going to talk to a parent about their child, then I would tell them, this is what I see in the classroom. Do you see it at home? What do you do at home to correct this behavior? And
mm-hmm.
I could ask them, you know, these are some things that I'm doing in my classroom. Will you consider following through with it at home?
Mm-hmm. And what if you don't get a positive response? What do you think
your
next step would have to be?
There's going to be those parents that say, oh, that would never be my child.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that teachers just have to accept because it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, a lot of it has to do with home life. If they're not being disciplined at home for it, then they're not going to care what happens at school. But if you're a teacher that shows that you care, then you know there even a student that's not getting that discipline at home is going to come to school and want to do the right thing.
Well, I love
that
you just said
point.
That. I love that, and at the end of the day, that is everything, Amanda. That
mm-hmm.
is everything. The more any person, let's don't even put an age limit on it. You can be. I've been in a position to hire people, fire people, change people's lives by taking a job away from them, change people's lives by giving them a job. And I'll tell you something, and I think Shelley can vouch for me. On those occasions when I've had to say goodbye to somebody and tell them that they can't have a job there anymore, I never found it necessary to abuse them or hurt them. Yes, I was taking away their job. That was hurt enough. I didn't have to use my words to sting them to the point of no return. I usually just said something along the lines of, this doesn't suit you. This isn't, because you're not performing at the top of who I know you are. So this isn't the job for you. You need to go someplace where you can really shine and make a difference someplace. And by doing that, and that's usually how I really felt. I mean, there were occasions when I've had to fire people that were, you know, giving us trouble, or I knew they were stealing, or, I mean, there were those scenarios too. But, I mean, the realm of it is, I agree with you. If in a child, more so than grown-ups, know instinctively who cares and who's going to look out for them. But those kind of people are not as plentiful as we'd like them to be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if in your classroom, now you've kind of already answered this by telling me some of the system that you have set up and a few of the other things that you're doing, but do you discuss social behavior in the beginning of the school year, or do you wait until something happens that you have to talk to the whole class about?
I mean, I'm coming in at the middle of the school year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a new teacher, so I've only been working there for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I have a child who is autistic, and he doesn't like to play with the other kids, and that's just how he is. But
right,
I have to push him and say, go play. I mean, at recess, he just likes to hang around by me, and I have to say, go play. They want to play with you. Go play. Go have fun. Go run around a little bit. So that's something that you kind of have to, like, probe students to do. You have to force them to do with those kind of behaviors. But as far as bullying, absolutely. The first day of school, you're learning about rules in the classroom, how to treat each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And usually
and
it's
part...
you...
Go ahead, honey.
How I do it, and I'm sure a lot of other teachers can relate, you have the students write the rules with you. That way
mm-hmm.
they know the rules from the beginning. And if they don't follow them, then you can refer back to it and say, you made the rules. You know what you should be doing.
Mhm. Mhm. And well, I like that too. That means a lot. And I think, you know, that's also a very, very ingenious thing to do when you're dealing with anybody, and that's to put the ball back in their court.
Right. Yeah,
you know?
Like that.
Mhm. And that's mm-hmm. really, really important, especially when you're dealing with young people. So, what do you want to do about this? What do you think? I can remember saying that to my kids. Okay, you did this, this, and this. If you were me, what would you do to you? AJ is very funny. AJ always tells me, well, I'd probably spank me, and I'd probably do this, and I'd probably, he goes on, you know, and I say, well, I don't think we need to go overboard, but you are in trouble, you know. But he'd say, well, if I were you, I'd be mad at me too, Grandma. he's a different kind of child. We all know that. But so all right, on that social stuff, and like Gary said, you know, he knows his child. He knows what his child does, and his good things, his bad things, the things he can excel in, the things he doesn't really care about, so he doesn't pay much attention to. About when you're a good parent, you know that about your children. So where do you think? You and I briefly talked about this the other day because I'm a little annoyed by the workload that a kindergartner is given, so that he, like, makes this face every Monday morning that is, like, excruciating. Like, I've just asked him to walk over coals, burning
mm-hmm.
coals or something, you know. Grandma, 5 more days, you're going to make me spend my whole life in school. And that's what he says to me, you know. So he's very frustrated and struggling. And I always felt like kindergarten was the perfect time to get used to being away from your parents, being away from your home life, being in a place that's different, and learning your way. And the teacher and the people involved in helping you learn your way were working on your social graces as well as at home. So do you think that you should be participating in getting kids to understand that they have to have respect for each other and have respect for other people's property? Or do you think that should be pretty much on the whole, except for what pertains to the classroom, left to the parents? Or do you think we both should do it?
I think it goes with both. I mean, some kids come in without any, you know, some kids might be homeschooled, so they're used to being with themselves all the time, and they don't know what it's like to be around other people's things. And I actually had a friend that I went to college with, and when she went from homeschooling to back to or going into public school, she didn't realize that she couldn't just get up and go to the bathroom without asking.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if
such a simple thing, but yeah, I can see where that would happen.
Like this. Yeah, they mm-hmm. have to be exposed to things like it, and it starts at home. If you throw your child into school right away, and they're going to have a hard time adjusting, whereas a kid who might have gone to preschool or maybe even just Sunday school at church, they're mm-hmm. used to seeing, or just playing with their friends, like learning how to share, things like that. They're going to take other people's things, they're going to take care of other people's things better than as if they had just walked in and thought, oh, it's not mine, I don't care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I see a lot of that. I see a lot of, as kids get older, if somebody hasn't spent time talking about, you know, what's yours is yours and what's mine is mine, and if we're good friends, we can share, but we do it. I mean, with my kids, I always said, Mom, can I ride Mike's bike? You have to go ask Mike. But you bought it for him. I don't care. It's Mike's bike. You have to ask Mike. It's his property. You have to ask him if you can ride it. And I've always stood very strong on things like that, and I've always felt that that's what was right. Once something belongs to an individual, it's theirs, whether you're the mom that bought it or whoever. So, but I also see, I see a different thing going on. I like a couple of my grandchildren. Well, the only one who shares clothes with everybody, of course, is Crystal. But they don't seem to care if so-and-so comes over and wears a pair of your new $40 skinny jeans home. You never see them again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, how could she not bring back your skinny jeans? You know, things like that. And again, I think that is supposed to be started early on and talked about in kindergarten and first grade. While you're learning the ABCs, you should be also learning about respect and everything that goes with that. So you think it should be done in both places. I agree with you. And I also think that little things like doing scenarios in school, like we used to call it in the gymnasium. That's how old I am. Now they have theaters in the schools. So if you're in the theater doing I always thought it was nice. Some of the schools that my kids went to, they would do reenactments about what you're supposed to do if this happens and what you're supposed to do if that happens. Are you doing anything like that in your classroom, or have you set up anything like that as yet, or is it too early?
I haven't set up anything like that. I mean, pretty much the only kind of thing like that I've seen is reviewing safety procedures like fire drills or tornado drills or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, this
is
more.
I'm really blessed to have a good class, so I haven't mm-hmm. seen the need to do stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
definitely spent on actual social interaction skills and not topical information like reading or math and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
See, all of that is the first weeks of school. Really, the first probably 6 weeks of school, I don't think there should be any kind of basic instruction. I think it should all be getting to know each other, learning the rules, learning the procedures. And
Me too.
I'm pretty sure if there's any other teachers that are listening, they think the exact same thing.
Well, it certainly makes your life a lot easier. That's
absolutely
one of the other things that I don't understand. I mean, my mother-in-law used to yell at me about that because she'd say to me, why do you let the kids walk around with crackers and cookies? Well, the truth of the matter was it was easier for me than, I mean, I had 4 kids in 5 years. That meant setting everybody at the table and having everybody do this and having everybody do that. Instead, I'm out in the kitchen cooking. Everybody's driving me crazy because they're starving. So I'd hand everybody a couple Ritz crackers and say, here, eat these. These will hold you over until dinner. My mother-in-law would come in and she'd say, now you have to vacuum up all the Ritz crackers, Renee. Why do you do that? And I'd say, because in the moment it was easier for me. But she was right.
Yeah.
You know, I know that now. Of course, it took me 64 years, but I get that now. I understand now what she was trying to teach me or show me. In my effort to make things easier on myself, which we all do in many different scenarios, I made things harder on myself.
Right, right, in the long run.
And I think that's kind of what happens in school, with all the rules and the regulations and not enough time given to understand them, learn them, and use them, then they forget them.
Right, right.
So where are we at now? We're in February, so that's September, October, November, December, January, February. Well, we're almost in March, aren't we? So we're 6 months into school. So we're going into the third marking period.
We're in the third marking period right now.
Yeah, right now. Okay. So now it would be normal for you to be into the academics and all the other stuff that you're doing. And by now, you should have a classroom that's going together pretty well. When you stepped in to this school, everybody was already functioning on a level that you were comfortable with in the classroom?
Well, I mean, say I couldn't do everything exactly the same way that the last teacher did. So, of course, I had to change things. And so for the first few weeks, I didn't teach as much as all of the other teachers were. And I had to establish myself as their teacher and let them know my rules. So, I wasn't teaching right away.
So, in other words, when you came in, even though the other teacher had things set up the way she liked them, you had to do things that suited your personality and the way you like to do things. And were the kids accepting of that?
Actually, I tried to do things the way that she did it at first, and it just wasn't working for me. I was having a hard time learning all of it, and so I just recently changed my whole reading program. Within the past 3 weeks, and they absolutely love it. So, I mean, if you teach
that's
it
great.
The right way and you model it, that's what it's all about, is them really learning it. I mean, you have to spend the time teaching it, otherwise they're not going to follow it the way that you want them to.
Well, and I'll go along with that 100%. And I also think in a lot of cases like that, if, you know, there's a lot to be said for wanting, when you like somebody, when you like your teacher, you want to perform. You want to be the good kid that your teacher expects you to be. So it is important for a teacher to have a rapport with the classroom. And you could be, the only time that happened to me, I was in sixth grade, and prior to that, all my teachers were elderly ladies who really didn't have the time of day for any of us, never called me by my nickname, always called me Maureen, which made me feel like I was constantly and chronically in trouble. And and then I met this man teacher who was relatively young. I didn't think he was then, but I realize he was now. And he was great. And he kind of like brought me out of my shell and made me understand that that I could make mistakes and not be embarrassed, and I could answer a question and be wrong and not be ridiculed. He ran a classroom that felt like you were in a room full of your friends, and the relaxed atmosphere and the feeling of trust was in the room.
Right.
And that's a word I haven't brought up yet tonight, but in my vocabulary, trust is a biggie for children in particular. It's a biggie for all of us, but it's really a big one for kids to know that they can trust you. Like Gary said, I'm going to stand behind my kid. Our kids need to know that. They need to know that no matter what foolishness we do, you know, what mistakes we've made, that they can trust us to do what we believe is best for them, always and forever.
Renee, I just wanted to bring up, like, I was a substitute teacher out here in the country for like 3 years, and I mean it was mostly women teacher, and I would come into their classrooms and the kids just loved me. I mean, it was just something about me that, you know, and I didn't let them get away with everything. It was just, I knew how to interact with them, and I knew how to talk to them, and I knew how to teach them. And the kids that were really struggling, I would give them that extra attention and whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids loved me, and the teachers started resenting me. I mean, they pretty much pushed me out of that school because they couldn't. I mean, it was like it goes this way or no way. And I can't think like that. So, yeah, I kind of like did it my way, and it worked for the students, but the teachers really resented that. So eventually, you know, I end up doing the after-school program and did plays for students and started getting overwhelmed.
Well,
with, you know.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think is special too, like when you're in a real young class like what Amanda's got right now, is being able to interact with things like that. That was another thing that I was very shy, very quiet. When I was, I know that people that know me now don't ever believe this story when I tell it, but they brought my mother into school and asked my mother if she was beating me. And my mother, you know, was mortified and said, "What are you talking about?" And they said, "Well, she's like so quiet and shy, and she doesn't talk, and she, you know, she does her work and everything, and she's polite, but she like doesn't." And I guess I thought that's what I was supposed to do. It wasn't because I had any fear or anything, but they actually asked my mother if she was abusing me.
Oh, my gosh.
And until I had Mr. Reed. And I think it was just because I didn't interact with anybody because I didn't think they cared.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think they cared if I interacted with them. I think I felt like they were just as happy if I just did what I was doing.
Right.
You know, was quiet and behaved myself, stayed out of everybody's way. That's what I thought they wanted from me. So interacting with the kids and letting them know what pleases you and what doesn't please you, I think is imperative, whether you're the teacher, the parent, or just an adult friend in another kid's life.
Mm-hmm.
But it is one of the things that's missing today. You know, before we end today, I want to kind of throw this into the mix. It's not so much about young people, but it's about the young people who have grown up. And I watched the Oscars last night. I thought it was an awesome, awesome show. And the people that entertain us for most of our lives make us laugh, make us cry, give us insights to things that we don't know anything about, take us to lands that we'll never get to travel to on our own, did an amazing job with the movies that they presented this year, and then last night the kudos that they gave to each other. And today I wake up, and on the news and on the internet, everybody's judging all these people. And I'm like, what are you thinking? Where do you get off passing? Could you do what the MC did? He was amazing. He sang, he danced, he told silly jokes. He was a ball of fire for the whole, like, four-hour Oscars. And people still found it necessary to critique him, like they have the right to do that.
I know, I find it amazing when people criticize other people. They don't understand how they do what they do, whether it be on a personal level or professionally at a job, and they feel that they have to throw their two cents in. Meanwhile, like you just made the comment, it's like, could they get up and do that? And it always shocks me, and it's actually very disappointing that people feel the necessity to constantly find fault, find the out point, find what's
mm-hmm.
wrong, you know?
Yeah. Pick it apart.
They pick it apart. But, you know, if people, you know, and this is for everybody that's listening right now, if you watch an hour-long movie or a two-hour-long movie or a show, just like the Oscars, like you're saying, and you find all the things in there that you like and you concentrate on that, even if it's 10 things, you'll end up feeling good at the end of the evening. But
isn't
if you
it the
pick
truth?
Apart everything
oh,
you want
gosh.
And you find everything that's wrong, you end up feeling like you wasted 4 hours of your life, and then you're miserable, and then you just, you know, bitch, moan, and complain, basically. It's,
mm-hmm.
you know, we do, you know, people like that, they do it to themselves, and then they wonder why they're always in a bad mood and grumpy.
They wonder why they're grumpy all the time. So on that note, the reason that I brought it up, how would you feel, Amanda, about doing a little test for all of us that you can come back and talk about another time?
Okay.
I mean, it's nothing that's a big deal, but I'd love for you to have a time in your classroom that you ask each one of your kids about what happened to them on that weekend or the day before, I don't care how you do it, that was really positive and made you feel really good inside, and have them share that with everybody. Do you think they'd do
okay.
that?
Okay, absolutely.
And then see what it does to the morale in your class. You know, see what it does to how everybody feels about everybody, and if the energy in the room is lighter and feels better, and if it makes a difference, if they get to, and you're probably going to have to do some, some explaining about what the word positive means, and mm-hmm. you're probably going to have to really get them so that they understand it, so you're not just hearing stories about how, you know, I got to go to McDonald's and have dinner, you know, stuff
yeah.
like that. I mean, something that was really positive in their life, and see what they do, and then come back and tell us about it. What do you think?
Absolutely.
Okay. Because
absolutely.
I'll tell you something, even in a manager's meeting, I've had lots of manager's meetings, and if it starts out with a funny story or an anecdote about a guest or about one of the staff or anything, the whole meeting would be happy, connecting, and made everybody feel good about belonging to the team. If all you talked about was how everybody screwed up all week, everybody left with their head hanging down to their knees, and I just can't please anybody, and why am I here kind of an attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
So even though young people most of the time are happy and up, surprisingly enough, they have stressful things that happen to them, and it could even be bothering them when they come in on any given morning. So if you tested them like that and said that, or even every morning, let three kids tell you something that really positive happened to them the night before, and get other little kids thinking about the positive things that happened to them, it could change every bit of energy in your classroom.
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Absolutely.
Okay. You're going to try it. And when can we have you back on the show, Mans?
Probably not until after Wednesday, maybe Wednesday night.
Okay. That would be great. And I'll come up with some more questions. And you think about things that you'd like to share with us as well. Okay?
Okay.
And Gary, I'd like you to come on sometime and talk. I mean, we've talked about bullying, and we've talked about a lot of other things. But now that I know more about you, I would love for you to come on and talk about doing after-school stuff with kids and teaching them some of the things you did, because you may share something with somebody that can use that and make something better in some little abstract town in who knows where.
Sounds good.
Okay.
I'm there.
Okay. Beautiful. I want to thank you all. It's been a great, great show tonight. I really appreciate everybody's input. And I hope it helped a few people wherever you are. And I love everybody. And thank you for joining me. And this is Reedy's Heart to Heart. I'll see you next time. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.